Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Jaden.
And in this episode, we're going to talk some quick comic news. And then the majority of the episode, we're going to be talking about the change in relationship of Batman and Superman over the years in kind of anticipation of this weekend, Batman versus Superman, the movie launching nationwide. In fact, I think worldwide, right?
I think so.
Yeah. So the movie's been out for a few days already, and the reviews I've seen have been mixed. So I guess it's one of those things you kind of have to go and see it for yourself and see if you enjoy it.
We're sitting on top of the story of the century here.
First, some comic news. I just wanted to comment that J.T. Krull, who I interviewed at Long Beach Comic Expo last month, recently did a more in-depth interview about his upcoming DC project, Bloodlines. That's a project we also talked to V. Ken Marion about when he was a guest on the show a few episodes back. So there's a link to the article on Multiversity Comics in the show notes if you want to go and take a look. I definitely would recommend going and reading the article, or at the very least, going and checking out the article just for the pictures of V. Ken Marion's art that are in the article. Man, it looks so good. I cannot wait to see this book and read it. Next bit of news, Alan Davis is taking over for Frank Cho as the artist on Totally Awesome Hulk for the second arc. This arc is supposedly going to focus on Bruce Banner. For those of you that haven't been reading Totally Awesome Hulk, after Secret Wars ended and the Marvel Universe restarted, or whatever they want to call it, relaunch, reboot, Bruce Banner has been missing. We know that Amadeus Cho is the Hulk and seems to be very much enjoying that role. Where Bruce Banner has been and why he's not the Hulk anymore has been a mystery up to this point. So while I have found Totally Awesome Hulk not to necessarily be to my liking, just because I don't care for the character of Amadeus Cho, and I never really have, Frank Cho's art was definitely, the art was definitely well done in the series up to this point, and I am a big fan of Alan Davis, and I've been very curious to know what happened and what transpired and why Bruce Banner's not the Hulk anymore. So while I was on the verge of dropping the book, I may continue for the next arc just to see how much it focuses on Bruce Banner and how he got to the point he's at. Next bit of news is pretty interesting. So I guess in the recent Loot Crate that just got mailed out, a lot of people have received, there was a Harley Quinn comic, and not just any Harley Quinn comic. Now, we've seen Loot Crate before include comics, and usually they're ordered through Diamond. And what that does basically is whatever comic is in the Loot Crate, it immediately shoots up to the top of the charts as far as sales for that month, with like, you know, 500,000 copies, which is pretty much unheard of these days as far as circulation and sales numbers for a comic. So it's definitely a boon when a comic does get included in one of these Loot Crates. But what we haven't seen now, before these comics that have been included, they're usually like a special variant, like a different cover or what have you, some kind of a special issue. But the interior of the comic has been the same that you can go down to your local comic store and get, you know, whether it's just a special cover or whatever, right? Oversized. But up to this point, there hasn't been a comic specifically created for Loot Crate until now. So DC Comics reached an agreement with Loot Crate to put out a special Harley Quinn comic. This Harley Quinn comic is only available if you order the Loot Crate, which it's, you know, it's no longer, you no longer can order the Loot Crate. It's too late. So they've been selling on eBay, the secondary market, pretty much the only way to get your hands on it. And they've been going for over $20. So Jimmy Palmiotti, who co-writes Harley Quinn with Amanda Connor, had some comments and on Twitter and such, and they're all collected in an article on Bleeding Cool. You can go to the show notes to find the article. But basically, what he was saying is, if you're a Harley Quinn fan, just have patience. You know, Harley Quinn is a best-selling book for DC, but it certainly doesn't sell anywhere near 500,000 copies a month, which means a lot of the people, you know, and there's 500,000 copies of this comic out there because, you know, that's how many Loot Crate, you know, subscribers there are. So that means a lot of these copies are going to end up on eBay down the line as more people get around to putting them on and such. So, you know, it's the whole supply and demand thing. Now, normally, if issue of Harley Quinn sells 50,000 copies, well, there's 10 times that amount out there. You know, and granted, some of the people are going to want that got the Loot Crate are going to want to keep it. But even if half of them decide to keep it, that's still an extra 250,000 copies that are going to be out there. So the book is going to be around. You're going to be able to find it. And that's basically what Jimmy was saying. He's like, don't pay a premium now. Just have patience. You'll be able to get your hands on it, eventually. So, the next bit of news is Scott Snyder's off Detective Comics already and onto another Batman project. So it had been speculated that, Tom King was going to take over for Batman. It was going to be a bi-weekly book, rather. It was going to come out twice a month. And Scott Snyder just wasn't interested in that kind of grind because of his other projects and other things he wants to do, you know, his teaching and his creator-owned projects and such. So it was speculated he was going to go back to Detective, which was the Batman title he first started on before the Flashpoint event and the New 52. Well, then, when DC announced their plans at the Comics Pro event a few weeks ago, we saw that Detective Comics was listed as a bi-weekly book. So that was going to come out twice a week too. So some people were kind of like, oh, wait a second. I thought Snyder said he didn't want to do a bi-weekly. So we didn't hear anything for a while. And then just recently, it was confirmed that he indeed, this was at C2E2, the Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo that happened this last weekend in Chicago. And on one of the panels, he confirmed he's indeed not writing Detective. So I don't know if, you know, originally he agreed to it, thinking it was going to be just a monthly book. And then as they were going along, the powers that be at DC decided that they were going to go bi-weekly with it. So for whatever reason, it's going to be twice a month, so Snyder is no longer doing it. But he is still going to be doing a Batman project. So I think basically all those stories he had planned for Detective, he's just going to take over into this new project. And it's going to be coming out later this year. It is a Batman book. It is going to be with a rotating artist, some of the best artists in the industry, Sean Murphy, Yannick Paquette, John Romita Jr., I believe, was listed. There's more details in the article, but you can go and check it out. So, and basically, it's going to be Snyder writing a story. I think the first story he's going to write is about Two-Face. So he's got whatever, a multi-part Two-Face story. It's going to be with a particular artist. And then when he goes to move on to the next member of the Batman's Rogue Gallery that he wants to focus on, it'll be a new artist. It also mentioned in the article something about it being perhaps oversized or in some kind of a prestige format. So definitely DC probably trying to capitalize on the popularity of Scott Snyder and maybe, you know, the things that they've done with their Dark Knight Returns or the latest Dark Knight Master Race series, with having them in that, you know, experimenting with the different formats and the mini comic inside and the larger hardbacks that have been coming out. So they've been experimenting with a lot of things. So I guess in a way trying to appeal to those people that are kind of like waiting for the trade. They want something nice. It looks good on their bookshelf and stuff. So there's plenty of Scott Snyder fans out there, but it'll be interesting to see if there's any blowback on having a higher price for these things and if the sales suffer because of that. The next bit of news, as I did mention, C2E2 was held last weekend in Chicago. Tons of Marvel news. Almost feel like Marvel is treating this as like a second hometown show. The New York Comic Con is kind of their hometown show where they seem to have the most presence. But they definitely have been showing up in Chicago in big numbers. They had a lot of announcements. I'm not going to go into all of them here. There's a few links in the show notes and you can go and check them out or just Google Marvel C2E2 if you're interested or go to any of the comic news sites Bleeding Cool or CBR, Newsarama. They have plenty of information. The couple that really jumped out at me, though, Deadpool 13 is going to be an 80-page crossover with Daredevil, Power Man, and Iron Fist. Also, we're going to see a new ongoing series for Kate Bishop, who's the female Hawkeye, and for Jessica Jones at some point, sooner rather than later. I believe that Jessica Jones book is going to be written by Brian Michael Bendis, who's busy with Civil War II right now, but once that's over, I expect to see a Jessica Jones book launch. Also, Jessica Jones is supposed to play a big role in Civil War II, so keep your eyes out for that. And of course, Brian Michael Bendis is the one who wrote the Alias book, which was put out by Marvel's Max line, which is the premise for the Jessica Jones Netflix show. Also, the DC solicits for June are out, but it's basically just a order code, a listing of the title, and the price. There's no little blurb about what each of the issues are about, and there's no creative teams. So normally, by this time of the month, of course, the information would be available, but DC is basically holding back all this information to do their big rebirth event at WonderCon this weekend on Saturday. And I, of course, will be there along with Manny to be able to share with you all the details of that. And finally, in some news, retailer info from Brian Hibbs, who owns a comic store in San Francisco. He's a very respected retailer and very vocal. He wrote an article for Comic Book Resources. The link is in the show notes. And he talks about all the useful information he got from the Comics Pro meeting, not necessarily from the publishers, although he did give props to DC for the publishers, Dan Didio and Jim Lee, for basically sitting there for an hour and answering all the retailers' questions and pretty much taking it on the chin for some of the decisions they've made. Whereas he was extremely disappointed that Marvel didn't even bother to send a representative. So anyway, there's a lot of good information in that article. Go and check it out. I think even a casual comics fan can get some insight into what it takes to run a comic shop and have a better understanding of the industry from that point of view.
The press has to do the right thing. You don't get to decide what the right thing is. Nobody cares about Clark Kent taking on the Batman.
And in a quick bit of movie news, Batman vs. Superman is on pace to open at $350 million this weekend after setting a record for the most pre-sales for any superhero movie, which I kind of find interesting that they label it like that. It's just, I guess, just a way to say it has a record. Clearly, it didn't beat the pre-sale record that Star Wars has it, right?
No, it didn't.
But that's who has it, right? Star Wars has the record for most
sales. Yeah, by far.
And it passed what the previous record holder by a ton.
Yeah, the previous record holder before that, I think, was the most recent Hunger Games movie.
Oh, really? How come I thought it was Harry Potter?
No, it was that was too long ago.
So Harry Potter got beat by Hunger Games, and then Star Wars smashed that.
Yeah, well, it wasn't even close. It was like 15 or 20 times, something like that, something crazy.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I mean, clearly Batman versus Superman is a superhero movie, but I mean, when you say superhero movie, like based on different criteria people use, you know, some things can be considered a superhero. Like some people consider Blade a superhero movie, some people wouldn't. So whatever. Anyway, the point being that Batman versus Superman is on pace to open at $350 million, which would be, I think, the biggest opening weekend. Second biggest ever, if it opens at that, they said, behind last year's Fast and the Furious, which I didn't
realize. Before summer, opening day.
Oh, before summer, that's right, yeah, before summer, yeah. Because clearly there have been some huge summer blockbusters, and of course Star Wars did a lot more than $350 million its opening weekend, so.
Yeah.
Although it opened on a Wednesday, didn't it?
Star Wars? I mean, it technically opened on that Friday, but people were watching it on Thursday.
All right, fair enough.
This bat vigilante is like a one-man reign of terror.
He has the power to wipe out the entire human race, and we have to destroy him.
All right, now onto the main event here. So we're going to be talking about the relationship of Batman and Superman over the years. So if you go to the show notes, you'll see three sections of comics listed by period. So basically, the first, six comics are listed Silver/Bronze Age, and that was kind of like a certain era of Batman, Superman. It kind of defined their relationship for that era. Now, it did change a little bit. Of course, the Silver Age, you know, things were a lot simpler back then. Comic readers didn't expect quite the level of sophistication that, or anywhere near the level of sophistication that we, you know, enjoy now. Comics were a lot simpler, maybe aimed at somewhat of a younger audience. So the relationships among characters and the characters themselves were much more simplistic. And so those things evolved naturally over time, but that's true across the board of all comic characters. So if we're talking specifically about the relationship of Batman and Superman, that relationship had to evolve as well, just because of the nature of the characters becoming more realistic and more complicated. But overall, the Silver Age and the Bronze Age, that relationship was pretty much the same as far as the way they saw each other and the fact that you could pretty much say they were friends. You could even say best friends. The second era is the post-crisis era, and that's the crisis referred to there is the Crisis on Infinite Earth, which took place in 1985, seminal event in DC Comics history, and really in the history of the industry. And that really marked the first time there was a marked change in the relationship between Batman and Superman going forward. And although as time went on and DC had, you know, a few tweaks to their universe, trying to straighten out continuity problems and such, things like Zero Hour and Infinite Crisis, the relationship pretty much stayed consistent throughout that long period of time. I mean, this covers a huge period of time from 1985, when the crisis took place, until the New 52, which took place in 2011. So what is that, like 35 years almost? Again, the relationship changed somewhat, and that's what we see in the comics of today. And it's has evolved a little bit, even though in it's only been a short period of time. So it'll be interesting to see with this rebirth and with DC trying to get back to the core of their characters, what that relationship will be. It could be argued that in a way, the relationship and tone of Batman and Superman in the comics kind of sets the tone for the entire DC universe. You know what I'm saying, Jaden?
Yeah, definitely.
Because if you look back at those early, especially like so the Silver Age, when it's just kind of assumed that because Batman and Superman are both superheroes, and they're both on the side of the angels, that of course they're going to like each other, of course they're going to trust each other, of course they're going to consider each other friends, and it's you know, it's a happy, positive relationship. And if you look back at those Silver Age books and read some of those stories, you know, they're fun, and they're, you know, to go back and read them now, and they seem, you know, a little ridiculous, but they're not very realistic, you know. And of course, these are fantastical stories of people with superpowers, but you just get the, you know, they're so fanciful, you know, it's not real, and they seem, you know, just light and fun, and that's kind of, and superficial, I guess is a good way to put it. And that's kind of the relationship, you know, there's not much depth to it. They're very, you know, two-dimensional, they're very cartoon-like, and they're best friends, and they refer to each other as best friends, and there's no distrust, they trust each other completely. And so going and reading some of these stories when you see them, because they do have conflict at time, and there's always some far-fetched, you know, reason for it, it ends up being just funny, you know?
Yeah.
The books we read for the Silver Age and Bronze Age. Now, these are by far not the only books you can read, obviously, that have Batman and Superman teaming up, but these are just kind of ones that I chose, kind of some real classic well-known Superman and Batman stories, and these are all from, well, most of them are from World's Finest, which started out life as World's Fair Comics and then became World's Finest Comics and featured these two super popular heroes, Superman and Batman, over the years. So we chose World's Finest 142, World's Finest 151, World's Finest 211, World's Finest 217, World's Finest 240, and then also Batman Brave and the Bold 150, which was a title that featured Batman and another hero teaming up. And this, I chose this one because it's pretty interesting. Throughout the story, you don't realize, I mean, obviously, you're listening to this and it's about the relationship of Batman versus Superman, you're going to realize that Batman is teaming up with Superman. But in the story, Batman doesn't realize it, and you as the reader maybe don't realize it until, you know, the story is well along that Superman is indeed in disguise. So, again, the early issues, it's just, they just assume each other as best friends, they trust each other explicitly, but yet they do these crazy things to each other, right? Like the, I think it's, is it World's Finest 151, where Batman gets the giant head?
I think so, yeah.
He uses,
yeah, because he gets, like, zapped by that ray.
Yeah, there's, I mean, again, really fantastical. There's an object headed to Earth that's made out of kryptonite, and it turns out it's some evolution, de-evolution machine that some Kryptonian scientist invented a long time ago, and so the planet exploded, and somehow this machine, which was, I mean, I don't understand why it would be made out of kryptonite. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, everything on the planet wasn't made out of kryptonite.
Yeah.
It'd be like if everything on our planet was made out of steel or iron or something, you know? It just doesn't make sense. And then, you can't think about these things too hard, because then you also have to think, okay, the planet exploded and this machine was catapulted through space, but yet wasn't damaged at all and still worked. Wasn't damaged by the explosion, wasn't damaged from traveling through space for all these years.
Well, I mean, this is back when Superman, like, had no real weaknesses. This is back when, like, kryptonite was, like, a whatever weakness he could have fixed the wall vision and stuff like that, like, crazy stuff. That's what they had to do with Crisis.
Yeah. So, anyway, I mean, the fantastical story, Batman accidentally gets zapped by the ray and evolves to what he would be in the year, like, 800,000. And so, even though he's Batman, supposedly he's still this hero, now that he's Super Batman with a giant head, because his brain has gotten so big, because apparently 800,000 AD humans have giant heads with big brains, he decides that he doesn't want Superman to be a rival and to be like him and be super evolved. So instead of evolving him, and we won't even talk about the fact that Batman would test this untested machine on himself. You'd think could have killed him, but whatever. We won't even talk about that. So he's jealous, you know, he doesn't want Superman to have these powers, so he de-evolved Superman to a caveman. his best friend. I mean, it doesn't really make much sense. He does feel horrible after, and they just, you know, gets resolved in some ridiculous way, and they're friends again and such. And that's kind of the par for the course over the years of the Silver Age. You know, they're friends, their friendship's never questioned, even when things like that happen. You know, there's always some story driven reason, and there's never a level of mistrust, even though they do things that don't necessarily seem very nice, I guess you'd say. Right?
Yeah.
I think it's, is it 217 when they take on, yeah, Metamorpho? And they're kind of a jerk to Metamorpho. You know? And again, there's story reasons for it, and they're just play acting or whatever. But man, they're, I mean, some of the things Superman says are just, I'm like, huh? That doesn't seem very Superman-like. So just found that to be interesting. So, yeah, it's just a simpler time, and that was the way it was for, you know, the huge, if you look at the history and how long these characters have been around. You know, they both recently celebrated their 75th anniversary. So still, for the majority of time that they've been around, you know, from the 1939 until 1985, they were best friends, and it wasn't, there was no distrust. There was no question about whether they, you know, would be friends, let alone get along. And I guess the thing about their relationship in these early years, maybe the one most defining characteristic of it, is that they never stop to question the ideology of the other. Because if you look at their relationship going forward, when it becomes more complicated, it's because of that difference of ideology about the way they approach crime fighting, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And that's where the differences arise. But back then, and maybe it's just because the way the stories were written then, there really wasn't that big of a difference in ideology until things like Frank Miller's Year One, where Batman took kind of a darker turn and became more obsessive in the stories and such, that there became that real sharp delineation between their outlook on what they do. What are your thoughts, Jaden, on the old school relationship?
It's pretty much what you said. That was pretty innocent. They're just kind of, I mean, I think it's mostly just Batman was a lot more of a brighter hero back then. He didn't have the dark suit. His suit was light gray and had the blue on it and everything. And it just, I feel like it was just, those were very superficial stories. And like, from comic to comic, there wasn't, like, there might have been some story arcs, but there weren't like really big story arcs. Is mostly just you pick up one, you get like pretty much a full story, and that's about it. They're, like you said, they're pretty superficial, and like just like their relationship.
Do you think, I mean, do you like that better, that it's just...
No, not really. I mean, I don't really care for the I just think that it's like you don't have as much invested in these characters because there's not much really at stake, because it's kind of like watching like an episode of CSI. Like it's good and all, but it's pretty much just self-contained in that one episode, and you don't really have that much in the show. And like, we're good shows, when you watch it, you have this story arc going along the entire time that keeps you wanting to watch the next episode.
Yeah, there's that underlying tension, right?
I mean, yeah,
you know, that's what you need in good stories to make them compelling. You need some kind of conflict. And maybe that's why they do have to go through these, the writers have to come up with these crazy ideas and have the heroes jump through hoops and find ways for Batman and Superman to come in conflict with each other through crazy kryptonite machines and such, because it is so two-dimensional and they don't really have any differences of opinion. And so the conflicts have to come from the outside, have to be external,
yeah,
rather than internal. So it would be interesting to find out if that was a conscious choice. I feel like not. I feel like it wasn't.
Yeah, I think that's just how it was back then.
No, back then, but what I was wondering is if, so, you know, crisis happens, we get the John Byrne reboot of Superman where he's depowered somewhat. And then we get, you know, Frank Miller's Year One that kind of resets and retells Batman's origin and takes him down that darker turn. I would be shocked if Byrne and Miller consulted each other at all and realized that they were taking the characters in two different directions than they previously had been, and that it was going to create an inherent conflict between the two by one of them going, I mean, Byrne, as far as like the brightness and the hopefulness of Superman, he kept that. He did ground him and make him more relatable. I feel like that's the biggest change of the 85 reboot of Superman. So his changes were more superficial. His ideology didn't really change. You know, yeah. It became maybe a little more realistic, a little more modern, I guess is a better way to put it. It was a modernization of Superman and the Superman mythos. Whereas the Frank Miller take on Batman pulled a lot from the angst and the darkness that you see in Miller's classic Daredevil run that was, you know, hugely popular and critically acclaimed and what have you. And it's part of the reason DC probably chose him to redo Batman and bring him into the modern world. But like we've said, it's a much darker version. And so, again, I don't think it was necessarily intentional. I would say kind of like a happy accident that these two former best friends, these two former heroes would become so markedly, their relationship would become so markedly different from what came before, right?
Yeah. I doubt that they met. I think that they just went with their own stories. They're just probably trying to set a good, like, restart point for Batman and Superman separately.
Yeah, but I got to think there had to be some conversations of somebody, some editorial or executive at DC realizing that, hey, now here we have these, you know, two heroes that were best of friends that now no longer necessarily would be because their methods are so different, they wouldn't just inherently trust each other, and it wouldn't be assumed that they would be friends like in the pre-crisis era, right?
Yeah.
And that's it's no more well showcased than right off the bat, Man of Steel, issue 3. This is the John Byrne miniseries that kind of, like I said, modernized Superman. And this is his version of them first meeting. It's written and drawn by John Byrne, comics legend. Great art, great story, like really, really, really cool. And, you know, they don't trust each other. They meet each other, and right away, you know, like Batman is ready to take Superman, Superman is ready to take Batman in. Like, we're in Gotham City, and Batman is on a case. Superman takes it upon himself to go there, and he confronts Batman as Batman is chasing down a henchman for one villain or another. And like I said, Superman is ready to take him in. You know, he's like, I underestimated you, because he grabs his bat line and is going to fly him off to the police or whatever. And it's not a very smart thing to do. Batman's just going to let go of the rope, right? And that's exactly what happens. So, but anyway, they have their first meeting, and Batman's done his homework. He said, you know, sooner or later, I knew I was going to have to deal with you. And so Batman has created this force field around himself, and because he knows it, he's no match physically for Superman, right? But he's created this force field around himself, and it's keyed to super dense biological material, in other words, Superman U. And if Superman pierces this force field with any part of his body, a bomb will detonate and kill an innocent person. And Superman is like shocked by that. Like, wow, you'd really do this? What kind of monster are you? And Batman says, well, you know, the ends justify the means. You know, I'm here. And he explains everything that's happened, all these innocent people who've been hurt. And so they decide to team up and go after the person that's responsible for all these innocent people being hurt. So they get a chance to see each other work and how they fight crime and such. And so it's a very well done story. And, you know, they catch the bad guys and everything seems to be okay. And then, you know, Superman says, well, you know, he realizes as they spend the night together on this case in Gotham that perhaps with Gotham being a darker place, it needs a darker hero like Batman. And so he's going to, you know, he's not going to take him into police headquarters. He's going to, you know, let Batman do his thing in Gotham and go back to Metropolis. But of course there's the, still the matter of the bomb for the innocent person. And Batman says, oh yeah. And he pulls out from behind him that he had the bomb on his utility belt, the whole time. So Superman's like, wow, you're risking your own life. You know, what if I'd been willing to take you in anyway? And Batman said, well, you know, I knew I was innocent and I thought maybe you could tell if I was lying and I wasn't going to risk the life of, anyone else but myself. So that just reinforces a Superman that Batman is someone to be trusted. So it's really a cool story. I definitely recommend reading. I recommend the whole Superman Man of Steel miniseries that modernized Superman. And Batman's last line is a little bit meta. He says he's standing on the rooftop watching Superman fly away, and he thinks to himself, a remarkable man. All things considered, who knows? In a different reality, I might have called him friend. So going forward, in this era, the other books are Action Comics Annual 1, Superman Batman World's Finest, Batman and Superman Adventures World's Finest, which is more based on the Batman and Superman Adventures cartoons. It kind of gives you an idea of the relationship with those characters, which is pretty much the same relationship they have in this era of the DC Comics. And then the next three are Superman 44, Adventures of Superman 467, and Action Comics 654, which is a three-part story called Dark Knight Over Gotham. And these three stories as well are kind of continuing off of that Man of Steel number three issue, really kind of establish the status quo for a long time of Superman and Batman. And then the final six issues in this post-crisis era are much more modern issues from the Superman-Batman series that came out in the early to mid-2000s, issue 1 through 6 of that series. And the relationship there has changed a bit just because this version of the DC Universe has matured enough to the point where these two heroes have worked alongside each other long enough that I feel like they would consider each other friends, and they do trust each other, but they still recognize the inherent differences in their outlooks on crime fighting. And they know that it's almost like their relationship has matured, and it's why I enjoy these issues so much. Just real quick, the story, Superman, Batman 1 through 6, Luthor has become president, and he's basically called out Superman and for some preposterous reasons, and, you know, Superman's an outlaw. Batman still stays with Superman, takes his side against other heroes that are trying to bring him in. And so it's called Superman, Batman, Public Enemies, because they're considered public enemies. And it's a very good story. And like I said, at this point in this version of the DC Universe, their relationship has matured enough to the point where they know each other very well, and they've accepted the differences, and they realize they're at the point that they know that they're never going to be able to change the other person's outlook and the other person's, I don't know. I don't want to say morality. That's the wrong word. But they just realize that they've come to accept each other for who they are as individuals, and it's like they've chosen to be friends despite this. And so, I mean, because they do some pretty crummy things. You know, it's part of the thing that people complained about the DC Universe and why they felt it needed a change. And that change eventually came around with the New 52 relaunch. But with things like Wonder Woman snapping Maxwell Lord's neck, and Batman with the whole Brother Eye thing, the DC kind of painted themselves into a corner, and the Batman-Superman relationship was among those things, you know, that just became the whole universe just became darker. You know, they were trying to tell good stories and compelling stories, but the problem was that each story they told, well, in and of itself, didn't make the change. The change happened gradually, and before they knew it, it was, well, these aren't the legacy heroes that we grew up reading about. They've become, you know, too dark and too cynical, and I mean, comics are supposed to be an escape, and that led to, you know, changing a lot of things. And I feel like the New 52, people still felt it was too dark. And maybe with this rebirth that's coming up now, that's something they're going to try to reverse. But those issues, the Superman, Batman 1-6, are very interesting because you get narratives in that story, like, which you don't really see in comics these days. You know, you get to hear Superman's thoughts, and you get to hear Batman's thoughts. You know what each of them is thinking, both about themselves and about each other. And it's very interesting how parallel they are in what they're thinking, as far as Superman thinks Batman's opinion of him is this, which isn't necessarily true. And whereas Batman thinks that Superman's opinion of him is this, which isn't necessarily true. You know, they both want to think the best of each other to the point that they're diminishing themselves. And so it's a very interesting dichotomy, and it makes you realize that that really deep down they're not as different as their ideologies would have you believe. So those are very, very good issues. The as I mentioned, the Dark Knight over Metropolis three-part story is also really cool. It's the first time we see them really start to fully trust each other in this post-crisis universe. You know, Superman eventually, like, Batman finds the kryptonite ring that Lex Luthor had made that eventually gave him radiation poisoning and caused him to lose his hand. And he doesn't tell Superman that he has it. Instead, they go on this this adventure together over in Metropolis over this, I think it all happens over the period of just a day or two. And like I said, very interesting story. Batman has the ring the whole time, doesn't tell Superman, wants to find out, wants to have all the answers in typical Batman fashion. But then at the end, when things are resolved, he does tell Superman, hey, I have the ring. And rather than Superman just taking it, he says, you know what, Batman? You should have it. You're the man that I trust the most in the world. If some villain were to mind control me or take control over me, or for some reason I were to go bad, you're the one that I think should have it. And really, when you think about it, it kind of plants the seeds for the whole brother eye thing later, which, for those that aren't familiar, Batman took it upon himself to find a way to defeat all members of the Justice League just in case that same scenario happened with each of them. You know, so he had a way to defeat Aquaman, had a way to defeat Flash, had a way to defeat Wonder Woman, had a way to defeat Superman. Well, the problem with having all that information is if it falls in the wrong hands, which it eventually does in the Tower of Babel series in the Justice League title, Ra's al Ghul gets a hold of it and all hell breaks loose. And again, it was one of the stories along with Identity Crisis and Infinite Crisis as well that really turned up the darkness factor in the DC universe, because the heroes felt like they could no longer, I mean, Batman couldn't be trusted. You know, that's how the other, to some extent, that's how the other heroes all felt. So, but I mean, when you think about it, it isn't necessarily out of character for Batman to do that. I mean, here's a guy that doesn't have any superpowers. And so the way that he compensates for that is to plan everything meticulously and to have plans for all contingencies. So, you know, why wouldn't he have plans to defeat, you know, not just villains, but heroes as well, in case, you know, the worst case scenario were to happen? But like I said, really the first time we see something like that, like, well, you know, Batman's got the kryptonite that'll defeat Superman if it comes to that. And I mean, it should be noted that in pre-crisis, kryptonite was plentiful. Like, you could, seemed like you could just go down to your local corner grocery store and pick up some kryptonite to defeat Superman with. but they kind of had to do that for the reason that Jaden was talking about earlier, is that he was so much more powerful back then. It was hard to be able to tell stories that weren't just going to be over in one page, because, you know, he was so powerful. The guy could move planets and, you know, whatever. So, how do you weaken him? Well, you have to bring in his weakness, like, constantly, 24/7.
Yeah.
With him being much weaker in post-crisis, there were other ways that they dealt with that. So, what do you think about the post-crisis, this 30-year era, Jaden, from the end of Crisis of Infinite Earths up through Flashpoint?
I think this is where we really got the Batman-Superman dynamic that we have today. Like, I mean, it wasn't exactly the same, but like you were talking about in Man of Steel 3, just how, like, I think the Superman is a lot simpler than Batman is in a lot of ways. Like, he has his ideologies and he's very adamant in those ideologies, and like, he would never go against that type of stuff. But Batman has a lot of, like, I would say there's a lot of gray area with Batman. He isn't afraid to interrogate somebody by maybe pushing on a wound or something like that, like
roughing him up.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, when he, like you said, how he had the bomb on himself, like, that's not necessarily a moral way to go. Like, him dying because Superman went at him, even though he knew he wouldn't, isn't really a Superman would never do anything like that, but it's not necessarily, like, the wrong thing to do. It's just something that Batman would do. And I think that really, like, even through today, I think that's really the story we, like, the morality, the dynamic between the two. Like, the New 52 is a little bit different, but it's pretty much, I think, this is where we really got it, really where they got the whole dynamic down.
Yeah, now for the New 52, we chose two story arcs. Justice League 1 through 6, which is kind of the first meeting of all the heroes that end up comprising the core 7 of the Justice League. And then Batman and Superman 1 through 7. And these two story arcs are really all you need to kind of understand the differences in the New 52. And there are subtle differences from the post-crisis era, but enough, I think they're different. The relationship is different enough that, you know, that we would separate it like this rather than just separating it from pre-crisis and post-crisis, right?
Yeah.
What do you think? I'll let you go first this time on the talk about the difference between the New 52 relationship versus the post-crisis relationship.
Well, I think, first off, they start off fighting in Justice League, and I think that's kind of going to be similar to Man of Steel. That the Batman vs. Superman movie is kind of like, I feel like if they really had a good understanding of each other in the movie, that they wouldn't really fight like they're going to, kind of like how it is in Justice League. It's more of like a misunderstanding than a real fight. But it's like they do have the whole difference in their morality and how they take care of stuff. Like I don't remember which DC movie it was, but one of them has Batman is going after some people and trying to scare them, and it's not Superman, but Green Lantern comes and he traps these people in his bubble and gives them to the cops. And Batman gets mad at him because he was going to rough him up and get some information about their, like, suppliers and stuff, and was really just chasing him to get them scared. And I think that's kind of the same thing that Superman would do in that type of situation. He would just give him over to the cops and let the cops deal with it. But Batman does a lot more thinking and a lot more deep thought into that type of thing. And I think that's more of the New 52 type of thing.
Yeah, well, kind of speaks to the difference in the characters, that change they made post-crisis, where Batman's looking big picture because he kind of has to.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he doesn't have that same power level that some of these other heroes have, so he kind of needs to get to the big bads sooner, before their plans can come to fruition, right? So if he's chasing these people because he knows they work for some, you know, worse person, he needs to get to that person as soon as possible before they create some threat that is just too big for him to deal with. Whereas from Superman or Green Lantern's perspective, it's like they can be much more reactionary. They can wait for something terrible to start happening, and they can step in and they have the power level to stop it.
Yeah.
And also, I think it speaks to, like, the obsession. And it's like, here are these two heroes, right? They're both completely alone in a way when you think about it. You know, Superman is the last of his race from Krypton. Batman is the last of his family. Like, you know, he saw his parents, you know, murdered before his eyes. And so here's these two characters. They both choose to approach their tragedy in different ways. Superman chooses to look on the brighter side of things, whereas, and not necessarily take it personally, but rather embrace his adopted home and think of himself as one of many. Whereas Batman has chosen to take that tragedy and become obsessive about it. It's like he takes crime personally. You know, if you're committing crime, you're, you know, robbing a jewelry store or a bank or selling drugs or whatever. It's like you are, like, personally doing something to offend him. You know, he takes it so personally. And so there's that hint of anger, you know, that underlying, like, rage of how dare you, and I'll do whatever I have to do to stop you. And you know, just like he said in Man of Steel 3, the ends justify the means. You know, it's a bit Machiavellian, but the ends justify the means.
Yeah.
But I feel like, let's see if you agree with this, I feel like one of the subtle differences in the New 52 is, right, I mean, they do meet for the first time in Justice League, like you said, at the end of Justice League 1, and, you know, the fight that carries into the beginning of Issue 2. But after that initial misunderstanding, there isn't necessarily the level of uncertainty about who the other person is. I feel like in the New 52, they right away, they kind of understand and respect each other more so than, like, in the, like, at first in the post-crisis, it felt like there is much more of a feeling out period.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like in the New 52, like, right away, they accepted each other for who they were. They trusted each other and they respected each other. They just didn't necessarily like each other. Right from the start.
I also feel like, not to say that, like, Superman's, like, dumb or anything in the New 52, but I feel like he doesn't think as much as he does in post-crisis era. I think they kind of kept him more simple-minded in the New 52.
Yeah, I would say he's much more emotional. He's less rational.
Yeah.
He's much quicker to have, like, snap judgments and be a little more judgmental. And, you know, I don't know if they purposely did that to try to make him more relatable. In a way, to me, it makes him feel like he's a little bit less heroic. But I don't know. Like I said, it's subtle. The differences are subtle. It's like we talked about how in the post-crisis era, how over time there was that level of respect. It grew. There was that level of trust. It grew to the point where, like I said, in the Superman, Batman 1-6 Public Enemies arc, I think you would those two would consider each other friends, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know, even at this point in the New 52, if they've come to that point, you know? It's like when you have two really, really good players, like, on a baseball team. They're, like, the two, like, you know, two stars. Now, this doesn't always happen. You know, there's a lot of times where, you know, baseball teams will just have like one guy, and you like, when you look at that team, you just say, oh, wow, he's clearly the leader of the team. He's clearly the best player or whatever. But sometimes you have two guys, you know, and just because they're on the same team and, you know, they clearly play for the same team and they're both want that team to succeed, they don't necessarily have the same skills, you know, like maybe one's a guy who hits 300 and steals bases and doesn't hit many home runs. And maybe the other guy's got like, you know, massive power, hits a lot of home runs and drives in a lot of runs, but you know, he only bats 250 or 270 or whatever. And so they're different skill sets. One's not necessarily better than the other. They're both, you know, popular. They're both incredibly talented, but they're just different. And just because they're on the same team and they have the same goal, which is to win a World Series with their team, doesn't make them friends. You know, they can respect each other on the field and want each other to succeed because they're both going toward the same goal, but it doesn't mean they're friends. And I feel like that's like the perfect way you can sum up the Batman-Superman relationship in the New 52. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I feel like the reason that they trusted each other so quickly is because, like, they kind of had to at the beginning when all the shit was hitting the fan with Darkseid coming into... was it Metropolis that he was going into?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, with that going down, like, and seeing how Batman went over to... I don't remember if it was Apocalypse or not, but when he went over through the one of the boom tubes,
yeah,
and was like pretty much willing to sacrifice himself like that. I think that Superman is pretty. I think it's mostly like, I think usually Batman's skeptical of Superman's methods, but I don't think he thinks that Superman is really like a bad guy. I think he like knows that Superman is just kind of, I don't know, just optimistic, I think is one of the better ways to describe it. But I think after seeing how heroic Batman was and all of that, I think Superman was kind of like, yeah, I guess this guy probably just does things a little differently than me. He's not necessarily ineffective.
Yeah, like I was saying, they respect each other. They realize that they each have a different kind of skill set, but at the end of the day, they're after the same thing. They, you know, they have the same goals, but I still felt like you can respect somebody and you can, you know, see that they have talent and you can have the same goals and still not like them personally, you know, on a personal level.
Yeah, I can respect Derek Jeter, but I don't like him.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's the difference now. Now, like I said, it'll be very interesting to see how the relationship changes with Rebirth. Does it go back? Does it stay the same? Does it go back to being where they're more trusting each other and they do like each other? You know, DC said that part of the focus of the Rebirth is to get back to the core of the characters. So when it comes to the Batman-Superman relationship, what is that exactly? Well, if it's the nature of the relationship as it's been for the longest period of time, then we're talking about them going back to being best friends and, you know, not really acknowledging any kind of difference in ideology. But I have a feeling they're not going to turn the clock back that far.
Yeah.
Because I think when people think about the core of the character of Superman, it is much more that John Byrne modernization, the way he, you know, became in the mid 80s, a little less powerful, a little more relatable. And the same thing with Batman with the year one that Frank Miller did. I think people still look at that story as the iconic Batman for the modern day. And that is a much more dark and cynical Batman than previously till that story came out. So anyway, I'm planning on going to see Batman versus Superman on Thursday. Manny has already seen it saw it on Monday. So, of course, we will be talking to you and doing an episode about our thoughts on on the movie. So we look forward to that. As I mentioned, I will be at WonderCon this weekend in Los Angeles, California. So make sure to follow me on Instagram, The Comic Source, or Twitter, twitter.com/TheComicSource, to see all the news. We'll have interviews. I have creator interviews set up. It's going to be a really fun time. So if you're interested, if this is the first time you're listening to our podcast, if you want to listen to previous podcasts, you can go to thecomicsourceblog.com for all our former episodes. You can also find episodes of our YouTube channel there, Manny's written blog, my written blog, our sketch gallery, lots of good stuff there. There's also a contact us link if you want to contact us. Or if you want to contact any of the podcasts, just go to the page and there's the thread there. You can put down comments, whatever you want to say. If you want to email us directly, if you have something you want us to review, something you think we need to read, any thoughts at all, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. I mentioned Twitter. We're also on Facebook. Just do a search for The Comic Source. That's us. Also on Twitter and Facebook right now, we're running a contest, and it is, of course, Batman versus Superman, who would win. We're going to be doing this probably once every couple weeks going forward, taking some classic characters and matching them up. And all you need to do is retweet and or reply with your answer of who you think you would win going forward. And the prize for this particular contest is the Superman Batman Volume 1 trade, which actually collects issues 1 through 13 of that series. So it's a really, really great book. I think it's issues 7 through 13 that are Michael Turner art. So you know how Jaden and I feel about Michael Turner, probably my favorite comic artist of all time, and I think Jaden's as well. So it's a really, really yep. great book, and you can get it for free. Just go retweet us, follow us on Twitter or Facebook, and we'll be selecting a random person in a week from today, actually. March 31st is going to be the end of the contest. And then I'll go back through from all the people that have retweeted or replied on Facebook, and we'll randomly pick a winner. So, and then a couple days after that, we'll do our next one, which, give me a second here, I'll tell you who the next matchup is going to be after Batman versus Superman. Is going to be Elektra versus Katana. So a Marvel versus a DC, which I guess it's kind of appropriate that it's going to be Elektra since the Daredevil movie just, or the Daredevil season 2 on Netflix just came out. So keep your eyes out for that as well. And of course, I'll let you all know when the new contest goes live. Haven't decided on a prize for that yet. So maybe I'll find something at WonderCon this weekend for everybody. So, of course, we want to thank everybody for listening. And I hope you all get out there and see Batman vs. Superman this weekend. Let us know what you think.